is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
I guess we are. The MGO guys, do I hear you now? I hear me.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yes! Thank God! This was going to be terrible.
Am I audible now?
You are. You have been all saved right. from the Wonderful. Seth Hughes show.
All right.
All right, guys. So, Brian, good morning. How are you?
Morning.
Good
That's
to see you.
Good radio, I think.
Yeah, we're rolling now. Hey, it's Lucas's first time that I've thrown him to the fire. He's going to get this, so I apologize. But and everyone that is watching on the video stream as well, good morning. It's great to see everybody. So everybody enjoy. Before we get to actual signing day itself, I've been talking about this for the last few days. I just think this is the most fun December that I've had in a really long time. TV commercials for like everything are better. Watching signing day shows seem to be more fun. Everything just seems better because Michigan's, you know, in those commercials for the big bowl games, and the conversations about Michigan on signing day are not about is the coach still going to be here. It just seems like it's more fun.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's quite a bit better than not winning the game. And also, all the Ohio State fans are so soft. It's amazing. Like, Desmond Howard makes it like a very anodyne joke about like the Ohio State offensive line, and people online lose their minds.
Mm.
And it's just like, do you understand what like it has been like for Michigan fans? Like, do you know that you've literally done much worse than this for 15 straight years? And Desmond Howard just like gets a minor zinger off, and people are on their fainting couches in Columbus. And it's like the beat guys too. It's unbelievable. The Ohio State beat is basically just a sorority for Ohio State fans. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a soft take by or hit by Desmond.
Right.
Also,
was,
I mean, it was just—it
was funny.
It was just—it
was a kind. It's like nothing, it was like an office rib. It was like a, you know, hey, you know, I saved this one for you on Monday because.
Well, yeah. It wasn't even about C.J. Stroud. It was yeah. just like, it's too bad your offensive line isn't any better. It's just like.
Yeah.
Do you think C.J. Stroud didn't immediately think? I also think that.
Right.
I agree.
So. Yeah, I mean, he was like, hey, I got your back, CJ. You
know, I mean, if people listen to Devin Gardner in this studio for 13 Mondays this season, he's talked about the offensive line he played behind. Quarterbacks admit what they play behind, maybe not as immediate as CJ Stroud could have in the moment, but Desmond wasn't wrong. It's fun to watch them, like the blue flu, the flu comments that came up and their reaction to that. And I mean, it makes December more fun. I'm enjoying this. And I was at MDN. I was talking to them and how busy they are. And we're like, yeah, things are busier. But you know what? Let's keep doing this. Seth, Brian, I'm sure you guys are more busier than normal this time of year with signing day overlapping with a playoff run. But you know what? I say let's keep doing this. I enjoy the being busy and having more fun and having bigger smiles.
Yeah, I'm pacing myself through it. I mean, people are waiting for the Iowa UFR still because I got the charting done for the offense. But man, I think I said yesterday that it was the 2018 season with a happier ending. Like they're like, no, that's a terrible ending. You can't do that to people. You're just gonna make them miserable. Go back. Rewrite the script, make sure they destroy Ohio State at the end, make sure their recruiting class finishes beautifully, and then have the Ohio State fans lose their mind on Twitter, and then in the last scene, in like the bring back scene, right, you have Urban Meyer get fired from Jacksonville and start it all over again.
Yeah, it's pretty well written.
Yeah.
All right, so guys, let's talk.
Will Urban Meyer be back at Ohio State once Day takes the Bears job?
They fired him. I mean, other than the fact that they maneuvered it so they couldn't fire him, they fired him.
So, I mean, there are heavy rumors that he's going to
Yeah, so Day likes to, he squashed the rumors, but in my few hours in Cleveland on Sunday at the Ravens-Browns game, talking to some Ohio State people, and just, by the way, to add to my glee, they do the stupid hang on sloopy OHIO thing at the Browns games. I had the biggest smile on my face when they were doing it. I actually enjoyed it. I don't know, like, maybe this is me, but I actually enjoyed that. Was kind of part of this whole December's been a lot of fun. But one of the friends of a friend, the guy that took me to the game, his buddy was talking about, yeah, the Day to the Bears to go reunite with Justin Fields and then Urban Meyer back to Ohio State. I looked at him and I'm like, I guess, and I don't know, man. Would you be opposed to it? I don't think it's going to happen. I see Brian shaking his head like it's not going to happen. Seth, you said the same thing because he did get fired from the job. But at this stage, Ryan Day running because he loses to Jim Harbaugh, so they bring back Urban Meyer is a great, it's actually kind of a fun storyline. Not going to happen.
I can't see it happening. I mean, this is a guy who was essentially run out of the job in slow motion because of Zach Smith stuff happening, and you're going to put that guy back in charge of a college program? Like, where could he coach in college? Las Vegas? He could be the coach at UNLV. That's
Youngstown
all
State,
left.
Brian. Jim Tressel's the president at Youngstown State. There's always a job at Youngstown State.
Isn't Bo Pelini still the coach there?
I think didn't he leave to be a coordinator somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Bo Pelini can't last anywhere very long.
Yeah, so all right, let's bring it to signing day. So yesterday was the first day of the early signing period, and we'll obviously talk a lot about Michigan's class, but Brian, I want to start with you on this one. The thing that jumps out at me most when I'm looking at some of these rankings is looking at the composite rankings in the Big Ten, where Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Indiana, Michigan State are 1 through 5. Iowa is 6, but then Rutgers and Maryland are 7 and 8, which means 7 of the top 8 recruiting classes in the Big Ten this year, at least as of this point. I know there will be some additions later on. But 7 of the top 8 classes are in the East, with Iowa, the Big Ten West champ, sneaking in at number 6, and they're pretty far away from the top 4 and 5. It's pretty remarkable that we know that there's a disparity within the conference, but that's remarkable that it's pretty much an even split where the top half of the recruiting classes are in the East and the bottom half of the recruiting classes are in the West.
Yeah, especially because you have Nebraska, which should be, like, they're not going to recruit in the top 10, but they should be around the top 25. They're the dead last
in the league,
in the conference right now. So, you know, you set up these divisions and you think Nebraska is going to pull some weight. They absolutely do not. And then the other kind of heavyweight in that division is Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's classes are constantly, I think, underrated because they do a great job of retention. So they bring in like 14, 15 guys a year. And recruiting is all about volume. And I mean, it's not all about volume, obviously, but it is a major factor. So it's a situation where, you know, I think Wisconsin's classes are consistently underrated. I mean, I think if you're a linebacker and you commit to Wisconsin, you should immediately get 4 stars. And then Nebraska just being in a tire fire. And then, you know, Purdue kind of had a couple years up there where they were getting Karlaftis and David Bell, like after the Ohio State upset, they had a little recruiting mojo, and that's kind of evaporated. So, yeah, it's particularly bad. But, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan are going to have the top 3 classes in the Big Ten every year. And then the most interesting thing to me is, like, next up is Indiana. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, Indiana, they have pretty good recruiters there. They just kind of fell apart. You know, they had a fall apart season this year, and Indiana can never really afford a fall apart year. But, like, I mean, Indiana looked great for most of this recruiting cycle, and they hired a guy out of Miami, Ohio, who's got great recruiting ties, and his son went to school with like some of the best prospects in Ohio. So like that was supposed to give them that boost to like be part of like be the number 3 team in the Big Ten East. And I don't know, like I think losing for them, they just can't afford to topple at all.
And then, of course, their quarterback transfers to go reunite with his former coordinator, who's now the head coach at Washington, so they lose their starting quarterback. It's just, I find it fascinating. As much as I can't say Urban Meyer, he did say one thing when he got the job when he got here. He talked about needing the rest of the league to rise up in recruiting. He made that comment. Penn State and Michigan are, right, those three, as Brian said, those three are going to be top in the league all the time. But when you look at some of the other, like Kentucky's really highly ranked, and you see some of these other teams that shouldn't necessarily be as highly ranked, and you're like, I think, and Brian's right, that Nebraska is such a glaring example that they're 14th out of 14 in the Big Ten, kind of like where Michigan State's pass defense was. But it's just a remarkable thing to see. And does this lead to realignment? Is this like another example of what people evidence and say, we need to do realignment because the power is just, it's so imbalanced at this point that it doesn't make for a fun championship game?
I mean,
the problem is there's not really an alignment that makes any sense geographically, so you'd have to, I don't know, you could do north and south and fudge it, but yeah, you got put Penn State in the other division, I guess. One thing I don't want to do, though, is like if Michigan State goes in the other division, I don't want a crossover game against them. Like, that's not reasonable. Like, move Penn State over and keep Michigan State in this division, and then they'll eventually even out to what they are.
Yeah, they could gerrymander, do like a U-shape, and have the U-shape be one and have the circle in the middle be the other teams or something. We could find a way.
I think when Nebraska entered the league and they were looking at divisions, I proposed something I called the Eye of Sauron, where one division is like the inner eye and the other division is the outer eye. But, you know.
Time to resurrect that, Brian.
There's not really a fix that I think makes a whole lot of sense other than moving Penn State. And Penn State's like the easternmost team in the league, except for the two teams that shouldn't really be in the league. So,
well, that's the problem, isn't it? Is that the Big Ten really isn't a conference anymore. When you have 14 teams and you're not playing everyone, you don't really have a conference. You have something else. And so I've never been enthusiastic about what the Big Ten did. You know, it's hard to, quote, balance it out. It's hard for it to make any sense when a team like some team in the West doesn't play Penn State, Michigan, or Ohio State the entire year, and then, say, wins that division where another team plays all three. And so it makes no sense. The only thing that made – I suggested this once before is that within the division you win, you get 2 points. Outside of the division, you get one. And then that's how the Big Ten does their standings. And that would at least balance the realities that in many years the schedules are going to be so diverse in difficulty. But I
got to keep hammering this, man. Divisions are bad. Just get rid of divisions. Anytime you have divisions, you're going to end up you're going to have an imbalance. You see it with the SEC. You see it in the ACC. It was
the major problem. Was bad.
The Big 12 was awful, right? So divisions are terrible. And then having a championship game, half the time you're going to get a rematch. Half the time you're going to get a team that doesn't belong there because they just had a weak schedule or skipped some games or got Penn State when their quarterback was broken, right? Like you don't have a good championship game. I've been saying for years, just have pods and then rotate through the rest of the schedule. That way you see everybody more often. You get to play your two or three rivals every single year. And then at the end of the season, have a showcase game. And they were talking, they were going to do this. COVID ruined it. But they were going to do it to like fix the COVID season at the end, where everyone was going to, they were going to match up an East team with a West
team. Versus one, two versus two.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if you do that and just say no rematches, okay? So you play the best game that you didn't play.
So one versus two.
Well, it's one versus two unless they've already played each other. Then it's one versus three. You play the best game you didn't play. Then you go down to the next one. What's the next best game you didn't play? And all the way down, there's always going to be, there's no way to screw it up. And then you always have an imbalance in the schedule, so the team that hosts is going to be the division that didn't get to host an extra game. So now you have an extra conference game. It's always going to be a good game because you're always going to have two teams that are relatively evenly matched. And then your end of the season game is the game that you need to determine a champion, because you always get to the end of the season, you're like, well, Michigan didn't play Iowa. What would happen there, right? Then there's your answer. You get those games. You never... This system would always give you an awesome end of the season. You would never have a bad matchup. You'd never have a rematch. And you would never have a situation with a split championship because the champion would always have to play the best.
We'll see what they do. I have a feeling there's going to be realignment at some point. It's just so imbalanced. And the recruiting rankings just bear it out, which is, it's just, they put it on the screen, right? You see it on the TV. You look at the ranks, you're like, at one point, Iowa was like eighth, I think. And so it actually was a true one through seven on one side and 8 through 14 on the other. It's just a remarkable thing. This show obviously is mainly about Michigan recruiting, but I do have one other story I wanted to ask you guys about so we can save the Michigan class for in a couple minutes. But when you guys saw the flip yesterday, the number one player in America from Florida State to Jackson State, that is quite a story for Coach Prime there, Seth.
I mean, other than the fact that other than the sponsor itself, which kind of was a little like, yeah, why did it have to be them? But they are so mad. They are so mad in the South, and I've increased the number of Georgia people I talked to recently, obviously, and getting the feedback. Now, the people that I talked to are not the ones who are mad. They're the ones commenting continuously about the people who are mad. But, you know, you have a new power in HBCU. There's an extra little case there in the South, right? Like the strange fruit era people down there. That bothers them a lot. And they mad. And they say things that are so mad. And when they mad, I so happy.
why are they mad? I mean, what's the etiology of their madness?
Can I guess why the good old boys in the South are mad that an HBCU has taken their players? Can I guess? Is there any speculation there?
I mean, is that it? Is that as simple as
Well, and they feel entitled, right? There's a lot of entitlement in college football. We're certainly guilty of it at Michigan as well. Not to the degree of some other schools that we get to make fun of right now. But, I mean, there's especially a ton of entitlement about recruits in the South. We saw it when Harbaugh went down there and had his satellite camp. Like, you're going to give kids in Alabama an opportunity to go to Michigan? What are you doing? Those are ours. Those are our guys, right? So these schools every year competed over the top recruit in the country, and they couldn't do it over the table. They had to funnel money, and they had the money, and they had the systems in place in order to do that. So, you know, Alabama and Georgia and then sometimes Ole Miss would jump in. Like, you know, you could make a big splash. That was a big part of their programs every year, was who gets the best player in the class. And then HBCU jumping in, somebody who's new, somebody who's not part of their thing. And, I mean, sure, there's for some people, I'm sure there's, you know, the fact that it's an HBCU is certainly part of it, too, whether they want to admit it or not. That really rankles them. They do not like power shifts. They don't like something that was theirs and shouldn't have been being taken away from them.
Plus, now the bags of money are legal. So when you offer when a kid can get an NIL, you know, offer mm-hmm. somewhere else, and now you, we offered him more. Well, now it's legal to offer it, at least somewhat, if not more. So there's a lot, it's a really interesting conversation. It was really fun to see. I love seeing the either the excitement or the meltdown from the writers nationally as it happened. They're like, I can't believe this happened, or this is the greatest thing that ever happened. And there was like really no in between on that. It was really fun to watch. It was a fun day yesterday. Michigan had a great day yesterday, right? I think we all kind of have in consensus that Michigan had a great day yesterday.
Yeah, I thought they had a pretty good recruiting class. In the last few years, it seems like the class sort of plateaued or even declined a bit by the time signing day rolled around. And this year it went the other way. It seemed like, you know, the recruiting class got stronger near in that signing day. So that was a difference. And the class looks reasonably balanced. It looks like they met most of what their needs were. You know, in particular, when you see six defensive backs in a class, it reflects the reality of where the game has gone, that you're playing five defensive backs all the time. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like a good class, and B, that they met their needs and that they finished strong. So in the big picture, it looks good. I have to say, one thing I learned from Brian Cook is a number of years ago, I think he said, maybe on this show or maybe just to me, he goes, don't watch Najee Harris's tape. Remember that? He said, yeah, just don't watch it. And he goes, one, we're probably not going to get him, and two, you're just going to get depressed. And so I said, well, I'm going to watch Najee Harris's tape. And A, we didn't get him, and two, I got depressed. So so I've tried not to, you know, look at the tapes, but now I'll begin looking at them. I have seen a couple of these guys, or one of these guys at least, live, and a couple of guys that Michigan lost live, and the ones they lost I'm not depressed about, and the one they got I'm very happy about. That's Will Johnson, who I did see play this fall and was very impressed with, and I'll be surprised if he's not a really good player. I also saw Keon Walker, who they didn't get, who I was never enthusiastic about. So not Deion depressed maybe? About the fact. Yeah, yeah. He just couldn't stay on the field. He was in such terrible shape. And so he's a project. He may become a very good football player, but at the moment he's a major project because his conditioning was so poor.
Brian, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, the nice thing about this class is that they really seem to capitalize on beating Ohio State and the coaching carousel. So they pick up an Oklahoma decommit. They pick up a Clemson decommit. They pick up a bunch of guys who were really not on the radar. Like Clemens, a receiver, was a guy who eliminated Michigan a long time ago. And they came back around, and they really added a ton of quality to the top end of this class. Now, they weren't able to, like, get in on five stars and stuff, but that's never going to happen. What's going to happen is you're going to get these guys who are mid to high four stars who are still looking for a home, and guys who shake loose from recruiting classes, and they really capitalized on all those guys.
I keep going back to some of the guys that they pulled out of areas where they don't normally recruit. You know, they went after C.J. Stokes, who is, you know, Columbia born and bred, right? That is like taking, you know, Bo Schembechler's kid, right? and having a, like, they, that is a guy who was right in the heart of South Carolina. They went after Dan Key, who was just a guy just like that. For Kentucky, they went after a guy like Leonard Barton in Utah, who was another guy like that. So they went into areas where normally you don't even bother, right? And they got one guy out of there. They looked at other people's scouting, and I think that's another area where a lot of times, you know, these are soft spots, right? These are places that other schools have not looked at, where they're innovating in their recruiting. So, you know, a lot of teams have camps, and they discover guys. And so Oregon has a camp, and Damani Dent is the best player in Oregon's camp. And word gets out, but most schools are not going to look at a guy if they haven't seen him on their own. Michigan wants to check this out, right? They discover him. They discover that Damani Dent has more interest in Michigan than Oregon for whatever reason. I couldn't figure out why, because, you know, Oregon looked like a much better program than we did for most of the cycle. But Damani Dent has got interest, and they bring him on. And I know that he's not ranked highly, but watch that guy. Watch his film. Craig, watch Damani Dent's film.
I'll watch all their
films. Now they're signed. He's good.
Now he's signed. Yeah, he's coming. I mean, that's a great player. They also got Deuce Spurlock out of Alabama, another guy who, you know, you watch his film and you're like, that guy should not be a three-star at all. You know, he was the both the Pollards, Miles Pollard. You know, Michigan fans all saw him on Junior Colson's film, right? But, like, normally you don't see Michigan going down to Tennessee and pulling out guys from, you know, from major programs there. They got Colson, but Colson was kind of a weird situation where his, you know, his family adopted him from Haiti, and, like, that story kind of helps Michigan a lot of times. You normally don't see them going and getting a Miles Pollard or a Cody Jones out of there. So Michigan is finding ways to win recruiting battles, and it's a very Michigan way. They're finding guys who have a certain academic profile, who would be interested in Michigan because of that, who have a certain personality profile, be interested in Harbaugh, who he's not everyone's cup of tea, right? So they found ways to recruit to themselves this cycle better than they ever did before, even if they didn't finish strong. So, I'm, you know, they did manage to take their strong finish and turn that into some guys like Clemens and Moore at the end. But even before that, I thought this class was better than some of the previous classes they put together because they really recruited into their own strengths.
I like the class. I like the personality of the class. But I'm with you, Craig. I wait on tape. I wait on really studying these guys. Sam talked about this on the show yesterday. He said, when you're getting your recruiting information, you need to make sure you put it through the right filters and know which filters are giving you the right information versus just, you know, rumors, because people like to throw rumors out there. So needless to say, I let Sam be my filter. Mm-hmm. And so I knew yesterday was going to be a pretty fun day. I also knew that Sam was in Louisiana, you know, ahead of time, right? I knew where he was, so I knew, like, that news was going to come, that, you know, that was coming down the pike. And there were a few others, and it was just... We had more decisions yesterday than we have been involved with in the last few years, and most of those go our way. It just adds to this whole, like, I just kind of walk around in December with a big smile on my face, and yesterday was a part of it. And, you know, at one point, though, yesterday it was like at 4 o'clock, and people didn't see Will Johnson's officially in, and people started freaking out. I'm like, but they announced him. Like, I saw, and he then had, he put him in the class.
He had an information sheet that was all maize and blue. Yeah, like, everyone knew.
Did you see that was on his information sheet? He is he is ready for the NIL era of college football. And he helped. We had him in with us in Indianapolis. He joined us for a few minutes on the KeyBank Countdown to kick off before the Big Ten Championship game. Quiet kid on the on a microphone. Not a quiet kid, obviously, on a football field the way he plays. But he is. I mean, this kid, Brian. You know how the, how it all goes, right? The, certain kids kind of flock to other kids. Will Johnson being the five star in the class, the number one ranked kid in the state, and he helped bring in a whole bunch of these kids and. Bring make this class kind of help be this class what it is, and it's nice to have a big time five star right in there in your backyard who's also a legacy.
Yeah, I mean, especially at a spot like cornerback where that athleticism really translates. Some five stars, you know, it, at different positions are not always going to hit, but a cornerback is going to hit, and that's where Michigan has actually been pretty deficient in terms of their recruiting over the past few years. So to get back to that. Era where Michigan was just churning out guys like Jordan Lewis and LeVert Hill and David Long is will really help Michigan as going forward. So I always like to get a five-star cornerback or pretty much any other position, just in terms of like, is this person going to work out?
Yeah, I saw him live, and he can play. He's not overvalued. He's extremely fluid and athletic. He's one of those guys. Like, I don't know, when the first time I saw Glenn Rice, he just moved like his whole body was oil. I mean, he was just so smooth and fluid. And you see a lot of that with Will Johnson. I'll be very surprised if he doesn't become an all Big Ten player and an NFL player. The only other kid that I've seen extensively is Tyler Morris. I started with him for some reason, and I liked his tape a whole lot. He's a wide receiver, and I think Harbaugh compared him to Roman Wilson, which I think he might be a little bigger than Roman Wilson, but maybe not. And then I saw him, and I liked him a whole lot. And I saw him interviewed yesterday on Big Ten Network with his parents, and he really came across well. He really came across as a smart kid and a kid whose head was really screwed on. So so the beginnings of my watching are very good. I also saw a small bit, and I don't know if you guys have looked at the big tight end from Idaho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Colson Loveland.
You see pictures of him like do the coin toss when he goes out there and like he towers over every single person on the field.
That's the question that I've got. I mean, you look at him and you go, okay, that's phenomenal, but you know, he's like 6'6", 250 playing against guys that are 5'8", you know, 140. And so,
what's wrong with 5'7", 145? What's wrong with that?
It's hilarious.
It's me. It's playing against me.
Exactly.
It's hilarious, Phil.
He's playing against me and Ira. And so I don't, you know, I'm not, you know, so I had a hard time evaluating him, and I'm not sure how you evaluate a guy like him off tape. He looks phenomenal. You know, a kid to be rated, a kid that's rated that highly out of Idaho is pretty unusual. So others must, who know more, must be looking at him and seeing a lot. I mean, you see a lot, but I don't know about the competition he's playing.
There are some hilarious moments in his tape. One of them sticks out to me is he crosses the formation before the snap. And the linebacker over him and the safety over him both cross the formation with him.
Okay. So they were tipping their hand that it was man-to-man, and they were double-teaming him. And he probably still made the play, right?
I've never seen that before where, like, it was like, you and you, wherever he goes, you're on him. And still made the catch, obviously, because it makes the highlight reel. But like that, I mean, Colson Loveland is, you know, going to have to adjust because – he's coming from Idaho, but I mean, Michigan's got a couple tight ends that they can play for a couple years before they need him to come through. But yeah, that's another one to be really excited about. Totally with you, Craig, on Tyler Morris. And the I was comparing him to Golden Tate, and Brian was like, "Well, that's Ronnie Bell, you idiot." And yeah, I mean, got Olympic high jumper. I mean, this is like literally the best jumper of his grade. You know, at one point in his life, at least, I think it was like in junior high that he did that. So I don't know how much it translates to college, but I still tells you the kind of athlete we're talking about. And then I kept on going back to Golden Tate because he catches the ball and then always gets yards after the catch when you think he shouldn't. And, I mean, that was Golden Tate and the Lions every single time. Like, you know, get the ball to him. He's going to get you that first down somehow. And, I mean, that's when we talk about what speed and space is, what Michigan's offense is about, that's really the number one thing they do with their passing game is they get the ball to a receiver on a crossing route and let him break a tackle. So that is going to be a very money player, I think, for Michigan out of this class. And then the other receivers they got just have a huge upside.
Yeah, those are the pass catchers. You want to put them all together. But those three receivers, I mean, two of them are what, 6'4", 6'5", 2, whatever, and fast to go. Yeah, I really like the pass catchers they added in this class. It'll be a nice addition to the guys that are obviously still young and coming back for next season as well. Still more to cover on this edition of the MGO Blog Roundtable here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket for those that are asking, I see a question out there on Facebook. Those are asking. Sam is on an airplane coming back from Louisiana. I think he's finally sleeping. He did not sleep from Tuesday to Wednesday. I assume at some point last night he did go to sleep. I'm not sure. And I'm assuming I should say that he's on an airplane because his flight is scheduled for now. I'm assuming he made it and didn't sleep through it all because he literally did not sleep from Tuesday into Wednesday morning when he was on the show yesterday morning. He had gone straight through. We went on and then he went right from the first half of this show to the was it Pancha?
Pancha Chula.
There we go.
Sam killed it this cycle, by the way. I covered recruiting this whole cycle and Sam was just, I mean, credit to him. He did his job well.
That is why I let Sam be my recruiting filter. When he says, let things be, people filter out for you, I just pick his brain a couple extra minutes every day if I need to, just to make us leading up the signing day, just to know what I might need to know for the day. And so yesterday was a fun day of confirmations more than anything else
other
for
than
me.
Falling it was great. For Walter Nolan hype, that was the one mistake this year.
That was, yeah. They got that one to Texas A&M. All right, we got to take a break here. We have another segment of the MGO Blog Roundtable to get to. Brian Cook and Craig Ross and Seth Fisher, myself here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. Let's continue talking about Michigan's class, the number 9 class nationally, number 3 in the Big Ten. So we've talked about some of the guys at the top. But Brian, who are some of the guys that when you look at it, especially when we're looking at the next couple of years that we're going to see some impact as you know some players will transfer out, other guys are going to get instant impact to play. Who are some of the names that you're looking at that you think are going to be names that fans should be following pretty soon from this class?
Well, you know, I think Mason Graham is a guy who really leaps out to me. He's already close to 300 pounds. He had a massive breakout season playing one of the hardest schedules in high school football because Servite plays everybody in that loaded Southern California league, and he went up against the best competition that there was on offer, and he had a massive senior season. So I'm looking at him as a guy who could contribute early. And then, you know, normally I would say one of these wide receivers because I like the wide receiver group, but I think Michigan is pretty deep in terms of like targets next year. But then I'm looking at, you know, Keon Sabb, a guy who, or maybe Barry, just a guy who can fill that Dax Hill role as sort of the third safety who comes down to the box and the nickel. Just a guy who is able to cover a slot fade because Michigan's doesn't really seem to have a natural fit for that currently on the roster. I'm not exactly sure what they're projecting at that spot next year, but one of those two safeties.
Yeah, I assume Dax Hill is in the draft. I've seen him as a early second round pick in some spots. And so that's, and I agree with Brian, it doesn't seem like the program has a natural fit there. So I'm going to guess that of the freshmen that have the best chance, it would be someone who could fill into that role. And that might be Saab. Seems like a reasonable guess, but maybe one of the other, the DBs they brought. Other than that, it's hard to see someone just stepping in because Michigan is fairly intact with the possible exception of edge rushers, you know, coming into next year. I mean, the running backs are back, the quarterbacks are back, and they need a center, but they've got two or three centers in the program right now with Crippen, Raheem Anderson. I don't know if they're going to get this kid from the Lombardi finalist from Virginia who's in the transfer
Remington,
portal.
Remington.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what his story is or how viable he is for Michigan, but So, and I don't think any of the kids that they've recruited, Gentry, Connor Jones, or Lorenzetti, are centers. So it's hard for me to see a lot of really early playing time. The wide receivers look phenomenal, but as you pointed out, there's Michigan's got five or six good wide receivers coming back. So someone's really gonna have to break through early and fast and hard, given the fact that the team next year doesn't look a whole lot different than it does right now, with the exception of losing, you know, your edge rushers.
That's going to change. I mean, you're not going to replace Aiden Hutchinson.
You can't replace Aiden Hutchinson.
I mean they're going to try to replace him in the aggregate. And I think one of the things you're going to see next year that we didn't see a lot of this year, actually, was how McDonald likes to go to more of that amoeba front and try to use guys in weirder positions. I mean, this year, especially as the season went on, they really kind of locked into that nickel, we're just going to put the same guys out there. It was, you know, Don Brown plus, right? Like, there wasn't a whole lot of changing because guys were recruited for roles. They didn't want to put guys too far out of their comfort zone. That has got to change this year because you're not going to have Hutchinson demanding doubles and messing things up every single play, and Ojabo keeping some of the pressure off of Hutchinson, or at least paying it off. And you don't have Josh Ross, who was kind of a, you know, he was good at two things that out of the three that you need to be good at for linebacker. So they're going to want to use guys in a lot of different ways. And I think that they got some dudes in this class who are really going to help them do that. You know, you put Will Johnson out there, he can play safety or play cornerback or play nickel. That is not something that they have in the current cornerbacks that they have. So that's going to give you some more versatility. That opens up a lot more. That Ravens playbook that we were excited about when we hired McDonald. Another thing that you need for that is a linebacker who can play safety. They did not have that really this year. They put Michael Barrett in, but Michael Barrett never dropped deep. And that's something that you probably can do if you have, you know, if Saab comes through at that nickel position, or Zeke Berry does. You know, both those guys have that skill to play that. I think Rod Moore is the guy that the program right now is looking at taking on Dax Hill's role, but you're still going to need another safety because you have three safeties almost all the time. So one of those guys, you know, has a good shot because Moten's probably your other dude, right? And then after that, you know, Makari Page is the only one who's even seen some field. So there's, I think that those are some of the spots you're going to see a lot of, see opportunities for this class to come in, are those roles that where you take on multiple roles and the defense is showing you different looks all the time, because that's how they keep the defense in the top 10 when you're replacing a Heisman candidate, is, you know, to, they're going to have to do it in the aggregate. They're going to have to make things harder. They're going to have more interesting blitzes and have more guys playing different roles.
Yeah, the chess piece thing, that the phrase Sam and I use, and Dax is a chess piece, right? You could put them in different places. You're not actually sure where to put them. And if you have, say, two of those, one's a hybrid linebacker safety, the one's a corner safety kind of, and you have a multiple versions of that, it allows you to keep your personnel on the field when the offense is trying to do different things, and it does allow the defense to open up, because yes, the edge rushers are going to look a little different next year. Doesn't mean they won't get pressure from the edge, but you have an all-timer on one side and a guy that had also one of Michigan's all-time great seasons on the other side. It's, you're not, you can't bank on that every year.
Yeah.
You can hope, but you can't bank. All right, guys, obviously a lot more football between now and 2 weeks and a day between now and the bowl game. We will not be on next week, but we'll be on the following week to preview the bowl game. But we do have a couple of minutes. Michigan just played a couple Big Ten games in basketball, so Craig, I wanted to give you a chance. I'm sure you have a whole pad full of notes on basketball, but I got a couple minutes for you to your comments after Michigan played those two Big Ten games in the play.
I got a half hour on basketball on my own, so it looked like Michigan had stabilized, I felt, in the San Diego's game and the Nebraska game, and they played very well. I thought Hunter had the best game of his career against San Diego, and it looked like Brandon Johns and Caleb Houston started to come along in that game. Plus, I love the fact that they hedged and had seemed to get away from drop coverage. I thought it worked pretty well. They did have problems with the guard from was he from San Diego who had 31 points in that game, or the, maybe, yeah, I think he was.
Yeah.
The well, San Diego. I mean,
they, they had guys go off in both those games. So yeah, Alonzo Verge went off in the Nebraska game.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So they're having trouble. They're still having trouble checking guys in isolation or one to one. But I felt like we're not turning it, and that we had been killing it in a negative way on turnovers. And I felt like in both the San Diego game and the Nebraska game, this started to stabilize. The turnovers were not as bad and far fewer. And so it was looking pretty good. Plus, although this I knew was going to be misleading, they shot 26 of 52 from three in those two games. And that isn't going to continue to happen. Then we got into this Minnesota game. Minnesota's not a good offensive team at all, in my opinion. And we went, for some reason, on the 1-5 screens into drop coverage, and we got killed by it. I mean, the court just opened up. They got look after look. I don't understand exactly what the thinking was there, particularly where we were hedging really effectively in prior games. Others may disagree with me on this. I understand the point to drop coverage, but to me, Hunter's not great at it, and he is good as a hedger. And so I don't know. Plus, we went back to shooting very poorly. I mean, if you look at the difference in the Minnesota game, aside from the very strange six-point possession that Minnesota ended up with, well, we're 3 of 18 from three, and they're, I think, 6 of 18 from three. Well, those three baskets are basically the difference of the game. If you look at KenPom's numbers, we're very poor still at turning the ball over. We're, I think, number 240. But we're worse at getting turnovers. I don't think Minnesota, who's pretty careful with the ball, I think had four turnovers in the game, and two were near the end on 10-second violations when Michigan was pressing. So we're not getting turnovers. I think we're like almost last in the country in getting turnovers. I think we're like 340 or something like that. And we're at 240 and getting them, and that's a big deal. That just means you're getting fewer shots. And there's lots to talk about here, but we're near the end of the show. I'm sure we'll get back to it. But I think I said a few weeks ago to some criticism that I felt that Michigan, it wasn't going to be obvious that they were going to make the NCAA tournament. And I'm saying the same thing now. It's not obvious. This is a team that can make the NCAA tournament. I hope they can. I think there's enough talent there, maybe. But it's still not a team that's fitting together and that is, and where it's obvious that they're going to start rolling. Maybe they will. I don't know.
So let's hope the optimism returns in basketball in the next couple of weeks. Guys, we're off next week. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays for you guys. We'll be back, though, for the Thursday before the bowl game. So that's, what, the 30th. So hopefully you guys could join us for a bowl preview as we're getting ready for Michigan versus Georgia in the playoff. That's going to do it for this edition of the Michigan Insider. Thanks to Lucas at the side of the glass.
I'm gonna make it.